Parshas Matos Maseh. We're going to speak in Parshas Matos. Parak Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Beis, says, Mekom Nichmas Bnei Yisrael Mitzvah Midyanim Acharatei HaSeifa L'Nefa. So take revenge against the Midyanim, the revenge of Bnei Yisrael. Afterward, you're going to die. After all that, you're going to die.
I'm just going to close this door over here. Sorry.
So afterward, you're going to die. Now, the problem is like this. We're going to speak about it a lot. What does one have to do with the other? Why is Moshe's death seemingly contingent upon taking revenge from the Midianim? So Moshe Sakenim said that Moshe asked Hashem to delay his death so that he would be able to fight the Midianim and he would kill Bilam before he died. He did not want Bilam alive and he didn't want the Midianim alive. So he wouldn't do anything to his people after he had died. Hashem told him it was a good request and he agreed. He said, not a problem. You're going to live up until the very, very end. That's going to be perfectly fine. That's the first shot brought by the Moshe of the Canaan. Now Rashi argues, Rashi in the next pasuk tells us that even though Moshe heard that after this mission would be completed, he would have to die, he told his people immediately what they had, that they had to die, and didn't delay at all to show his greatness. He went up to them and told them, this is what's going to be. I am going to die after this, and I'm still going to tell you to do it right now. Go fight against Midian, and that shows the greatness. That's all based on a Medrash Tanhuma, on Medrash Rabba. That's the idea behind it. Now, we have to understand that a little bit. What was the greatness behind that? The Kli Yarkon in the Malbim says, how we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was happy to do this thing. How do we know that he hurriedly done it? In other words, the pasuk doesn't tell us when he said this to Bnei Yisrael. In theory, it could be that Hashem told him, go fight the Midianim. Moshe Rabbeinu waited 7 weeks and then said, alright guys, we gotta go fight the Midianim. How do we know that it happened immediately? How do we know that Moshe Rabbeinu immediately went up to Bnei Yisrael and said it? They say the following. The Midianim... I'm sorry? Yeah, but this time there's a reason not to. Maybe he wouldn't because his death is contingent on it. He wants to live more. So therefore, how do we know? Where's the proof? Where's the proof for it? How do we know that he did it immediately? So the Kli Yarkon and the Malbim both say that the Midianim did two horrible things. The two horrible things they did was, number one, they caused the Jews to sin by worshipping Avodah Zarah and doing Znus. So they did something against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Number two, they caused many Jews to die. People lost their relatives. People lost their husbands. People lost their kids. People lost family members from this whole situation that Midian got them involved with. Hashem told Moshe there's two halakim. The fact that they sinned against me and the fact that they sinned against Bnei Yisrael. That's what the Midianim did. So he said, I'm mochel my own chalak. My part over here, the part that I did wrong, I'll be mochel that. But the Jews, they have to fight for the right for the Jews to be able to have something. Nikom Nikmas Bnei Yisrael, for their fallen comrades. They have to fight for them. That's why they have to go out there. So Moshe Rabbeinu was worried. If he'd say it as it was, now listen to this, he'd say, God forgave his chelek, but you guys, you have to fight for your fallen brothers, therefore fight, and then I'm going to die afterward. If he said that, you know what Bnei Yisrael's going to answer?
No.
Bnei Yisrael's going to say, if God was mochel, we'll be mochel. And if we're mochel, then you won't. You're not going to die. The Chidah says that at the end of the day, they realized it was going to happen. They had to be forced to go to war. But Yimsuru, the Pasuk says, they had to literally be moser themselves to go to war because nobody wanted to go. They found out that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to die from it. They said, we don't want to do it. All Moshe would have to say is say exactly what Hashem had told him. And the war wouldn't happen. He would be able to live. That's it. That's all he had to do. Nikom Nikmas Bnei Yisrael, he should have said. And everybody would say, wait, Nikmas Bnei Yisrael? We don't care. Moshe, live on. That's what they could have done. So Moshe could have done that. But what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He went up to Klal Yisrael and said, Nikom Nikmas Hashem mi Midyanim. Go take the nekama of Hashem from the Midianim. He switched it around. Hashem needs you to be mechaper for what happened to him, that there were averos that were done against the Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's Hashem's honor that even though they knew Moshe Rabbeinu was going to die, they would be so zealous to hold of God's honor that they're going to fight anyway. If it's their own honor, they'll forego their kavod for Moshe to live. If it's God's honor, they're not going to forego God's honor in order to go there. So from Moshe's change change of wording. The fact that he changed his words around, says the Kliyukah in the Malbim, it shows he was willing to die in order for the people to get whatever they needed to get. For them to go ahead and fight this war, it shows us that he knew what was going on and he was willing to do it. Now Rav Shach, brought by the Tal Leoros, points out that we know how much Moshe Rabbeinu davened, said he wouldn't die before he went to Eretz Yisrael. Anybody remember how many tefillos he said? 514. He didn't say the 515th tefillah. That was the whole point. If he would have said the 515th tefillah, the Aschanan, I wanted to daven the 515, but Rav Loch, God told him Rav Loch, the one extra tefillah he didn't do. So there's 514 tefillahs that he said before he went out. Says Rav Shach, he davened like crazy to go to Eretz Yisrael. Now all of a sudden he's told that all you have to do is push off the war, and then maybe you'd have more time to daven, more time to get yourself ready to go to Eretz Yisrael. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu do that? The answer is, it's obvious. This is about Kavod Shamayim. This is about honoring God and making sure that God, everything was going to be okay. He would rather die than push off Kavod Shamayim. But once the Kavod Shamayim happened, and he fought the war and the Midyanim died, then he wanted to daven, because I still want to go to Eretz Yisrael. I'm not going to push off Kavod Shamayim for my own desires. But as soon as I get a chance, I want to go ahead and do that. That's the idea behind it. Now, when Moshe told the people that he was going to die after this war, the people didn't want to go to war, as we just said, right? But that's so strange. Up until this point, the people didn't feel that way about Moshe Rabbeinu. The way it is by everybody, you don't appreciate the person until he's gone. You never do. As a leader, as a person who's in charge, you never have an appreciation for what they do until they're gone. Moshe Rabbeinu, this whole time, people were complaining, there was Korach, there was the Meraglim, there were Misonanim, there were people that had these ideas that Moshe Rabbeinu was bad, they were doubtful. Maybe Moshe's in it for himself. Maybe this whole time Moshe is just in it to be a leader. They had no idea that Moshe Rabbeinu was really Moser Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. We know from the Chumash, but they didn't know that. There were people that Mamish thought, this guy just said he has a little bit of an ego and wants to be in charge. That's what they would have thought. Chas v'shalom to say such a thing. So the Ksav Sofer says, only now did they realize how great Moshe Rabbeinu was. They looked at Moshe Rabbeinu, they realized how well everything was going, and they saw Moshe Rabbeinu told them, I'm going to die after this war, go fight this war. They realize, he's doing it for us. I thought he was doing it for himself. The whole time. But they realize now, if he's willing to die in order for us to fight this war, and we know he's going to die after the war, he knows he's going to die after this war, yet he still wants us to fight, that means the whole time he was always doing it, L'shem Shemayim. He was doing whatever he was doing because God told him to do it. Now, they loved Moshe Rabbeinu. Until now, they saw complaints in here and there, but now they loved it. What's up?
The question was that they saw everything from the tribe.
They saw that he was amazing at making things happen, but perhaps there was an ego involved. Maybe he wanted it because he was great and he wanted the leadership position. Only when we saw that he was willing to die by using his leadership position, by telling us to go in, that's when they saw, oh, he's not doing it for himself. This is the first time that they saw it, says the Ksav Sofer. Now they couldn't bear to see him go. Now, we still have to answer that question. Why is his death contingent upon this war? Now, great. All those are answers as to why he... how we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was so great, but why was it this way? Why did Hashem say that when you finish this war, you're going to die? Who cares? Why did he have to be alive for the war? Why not let him die and let Yeshua fight this war? Yeshua fights wars later on. Why not do that as well over here? Number two. The other problem is, technically, it should be the achar. Now, there is a plethora. You know what the word plethora means?
A lot of.
There is a plethora of vavs throughout the Torah. It is that and yud are the two most common letters, and there is a ton of them. Absolute ton of them. Vavs are all over the place. In fact, I challenge you to find three psukim in a row that don't start with a vav. I don't know if it actually exists. But try to find...
Are you doing other
vavs? I'm sorry? No. No. Some of them are. In theory, I guess. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I never thought about that. But either way, the vav, right, always appears in the beginning of a word, and especially in the beginning of a pasuk. Vavs are everywhere. I'm challenging you right now. If you can find me three pasukim in a row without a vav, I'll give you a handshake, and I'll be very happy. Right? Maybe I'll give you an extra drumette, if it's possible. Right? But it's barely ever. So all of a sudden, where there's vavs everywhere, over here would make sense. It would say, Nekom nikmas b'nei Yisrael meis v'dyanin, v'achar, and afterward you'll die. That makes sense. But Achar Tesef Al-Nachah sounds like go fight the Megunim after you die. What does that mean? How could that mean that way? So we're going to give a bunch of answers as to why. I'm just going to point out, and we're not going to do this, but in the Darin Lamed Ches Amud Beis, there is an answer, in Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, there is an answer to this question. We're just not going to use that because it has nothing to do with what we're doing right now. Baal Torah in the Panach Rath says, because he saw what Cusbi and the Midianite woman had done, and he didn't have kanos. We all know what happened, right? Zimri drags Cusbi right up to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, this woman, Usser or Mutter? It wasn't like, you got to think of it this way. It wasn't like he was hugging her and bringing her along and being like, check out this girl, right? Am I Mutter to this girl or am I Usser to this girl? He grabbed her by the hair, like Flintstone style, dragged her kicking and screaming into the Beis Din of Moshe Rabbeinu, said, is this Mutter or Usser?
Wait, is he a raper?
What?
Is he a raper?
No. He grabbed him in. I don't even know if that's a verb. But he grabbed her in to show Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm not in this for the taiva. I'm in this to show everybody this is what needs to be done. So he went ahead. So he said, Pinchas had the kanos. Pinchas got up as Moshe Rabbeinu was crying, didn't know what to do. Pinchas got up and Pinchas said, listen, I'm not, I can't let this happen. I'm going to go fight him. I'm going to go kill him. In that sense, Pinchas did what was right, but Moshe Rabbeinu did not. Moshe Rabbeinu should have fought. Moshe Rabbeinu should have been Mekaneh. Moshe Rabbeinu should have been the guy who gets up there and does it and didn't do it. Because he didn't do it, he needs to take revenge against the Midianim, because that was a chait on his own soul. He messed up, so he's got to be metakin what he sinned in his lifetime. He has to see the Midianim die. He didn't take the kenos while he was while that happened before. He's got to do it now. Says upon him Yafos. Even if he wouldn't have been able to stop Kisvi and Zimri, you didn't see Moshe Rabbeinu going out there and saying, "Guys, stop it. This is Usser." You didn't even hear that from him. All you saw was Moshe Rabbeinu implicitly allowing Cusby and Zimri to be together, not stopping them from doing this. In that sense, he had to do something now. That's why he had to fight the Midianim before he died. He could not die with that hate on his system.
But why did he say
this? Shock. Shock. No, period. Shock. That is it. He forgot the halakha. Shock. Period. That's what the Gemara says.
Shock is what the question or the reason
of everything. Everything. Then everything happened. He forgot the halakha of Kanayim Pokerbo. That's why when Pinchas came up, he said, Kwaini de Igrisa. You're the reader of the letter, right? Ilu Havi Parvunka. You should be the guy that's there. So reminder for everybody, if you haven't, I made a seum at the beginning so everybody can eat fleshiks, even if you weren't there for the seum itself. So you're allowed to eat from it. Okay, that's that. The Ora Chaim HaKadosh says a little bit more. Hashem knew that Moshe Rabbeinu's tikkun would not be allowed without that vengeance. The concept is called Usvivav Nisara Ma'od. Those around Moshe Rabbeinu, around HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the tzaddikim on that level, Nisara Ma'od, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets very angry and has high expectations for all those people. They're on a higher level, they're expected to do more. On his level, him not killing Zimri was a failure, and for that reason, he wouldn't be allowed to go to Olam Haba. What an Ora Chaim HaKadosh. He wouldn't be able to go to Olam Haba without taking revenge now, because he didn't do it originally. That's why he had to do something now. Says the Ora Chaim HaKadosh, this was a big tikkun, a huge tikkun. Only after he does this can be Teyasif Elamecha. Only then could there be an Asif Elamecha, and he was able to do so. Not until that point. It was impossible to do up until that point. Now that's the Ora Chaim HaKadosh. The Ramban gives two other answers to this question. The second one we're going to sort of argue. It's just the first one, I'm sorry, we're going to sort of say it on the side. Anything outside of Eretz Yisrael has to be done by Moshe Rabbeinu. Only inside Eretz Yisrael can be done by Yoshua. So Yoshua couldn't do it, Moshe Rabbeinu had to do it. That's one answer that we have. But the second answer that he says is an amazing answer. It's an honor for Moshe Rabbeinu to see vengeance against his enemies, against evil people. I want you to think of this way. Again, this is a concept that Rabbi Victor Miller speaks about probably 50 times. Once every parsha. It is a bracha to see Rishayim die terribly. It's a bracha. Why? Because when we see Rishayim having hatzlacha, and we see them being successful, people that are evil, that are doing the wrong thing, and we see that they're doing it and it's working and things are going well, we think to ourselves, there's no din in this world. There is no God. God isn't paying attention. When we see the Rishayim do an evil act and get punished, get caught in such an unlikely fashion, we see that happen, that shows us there is a judge. There is a din in the world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of it. The idea is, says Rav Avigdor Miller, and really the Ramban says this as well, we're not always zocha to see God's mighty hand against the Rishayim. Moshe Rabbeinu was zocha to see it. The Midyanim did something evil. Moshe Rabbeinu was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, go do it. Go take care of it. Be my hand in this. I want you to go take my vengeance so that you see it with your very eyes. That in and of itself is a reward, says Rav Avigdor Miller. Hashem could have made a plague if he wanted to kill all the men, women, and children. He could have made a plague. Everyone would have died and you would have been perfectly fine. Nothing bad would have happened. That's all you needed, a plague. Nobody would have asked the question, how could we kill the innocent little babies? Nobody would ask that. The reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it, then it's not an issue, right? But when we're involved, we see the vengeance and we take the vengeance ourselves for our brothers that they killed, for our brothers that they caused to sin, now we believe in a divine plan. We're part of the divine plan. We become, in essence, initiating ourselves into that system. That makes everything a little bit different. Now, obviously, that comes with its own set of problems. Why should we have to do it? Why doesn't God do it himself? But again, it's for us, because we won't learn the lesson unless we're directly involved. And as a side note, that explains Amalek as well, in a different fashion. That's not a full answer, but it's a different fashion to see how that works. Now, the Ohr HaKadosh says another answer. It's possible, this is the fourth answer we have right now, it's possible you wanted to make sure this vengeance took place before Bilam left the area. Isn't it, like, you'd call this like a crazy coincidence, right? The Jews fight Midian, and at that moment, Bilam was there collecting his money for what he had done to the Jews. And like, at that moment that Bilam is like, 20, like counting his money, right then the Jews fight them, and he's like, oh man. So he tries flying up in the air, we all know what happens, right? I have a whole other share on that. He flies up in the air, and either Pinchas used the Tzitz HaKodesh and brought him down to the ground, or Tzilya Ben Dun, who's an awesome guy, goes running up into the air, flies up in the air after him, grabs him, and brings him down. Targum Yonasim Nuziel says Pinchas grabbed him in the air and did like a whole fight with him up in the air. And what's his name says? Bilam says, I promise I'll never hurt the Jews ever again. And Pinchas has like a whole soliloquy. He's like, listen, you're Lavan, you've done terrible things to us, you did this in Mitzrayim, we can't stand there anymore, come with me. And he brings him and he pierces him by the sword. And then there's a whole thing which sword killed him. It's awesome. Because killing Bilam is an awesome, awesome story in and of itself. But nonetheless, they needed to kill Midian at this time before Moshe died, so that Bilam would die with. That Bilam would die at the same time. The Meshech Chochma says, it's really the Meshech Chochma, the Tzferes Yonas and the Chassam Sofer all say the same thing. The people are looking at it, they're saying, you know why Moshe Rabbeinu is not fighting the Midianim? You know why he doesn't want to fight them? Because he grew up there. He grew up there. So he feels bad. He doesn't want to fight his own, you know, his old people that he used to grow up with. To show that that was not true, that the claim is not true, Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to fight. He just was waiting for a tzivui from Hashem. As soon as Hashem heard that from the people, he said, go fight them before you die. Because if you die and you don't fight the Midianim, people will say it's because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to fight the Midianim. Obviously, he couldn't fight them himself, right? Because he still had a Karat Hatov. But he sent the army immediately to kill them to show people that that was not the reason. So too, people were saying that Zimri's claim was correct. They were looking at Zimri's claim and they're saying, oh, he must be right. If Moshe Rabbeinu is not willing to fight, it must be that he's 100% correct. They didn't want to fight him. The Chassam Sofer similarly as well. They all said that, and in that we're trying to knock that out completely. We're saying, go fight it before. Now the Netziv. Netziv says a little bit of a crazy thing. Whenever we fight a war, and again, granted, it is not, I don't know if this has happened in the recent wars. I don't know if this is the way it is, but it is an interesting fashion. The Netziv says whenever you have a war with Jews against somebody else, you have to destroy, Hashem destroys the Malach first. The Malach of the other nation goes down, and then the nation automatically goes down. We fight second. The Malach goes down first, and then we go. Now, there are two ways to destroy that Malach up above. Either that can be destroyed through HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, or through a Malach who's on our side. Who would be the Malach on our side? Who? Michal would be the one. Sometimes Gabriel, but Michal would be the one who's on our side. Okay, so it's either going to be done by HaKadosh Baruch Hu or Michal. Here's the pshat. Even in these wars, you are still required to have ishtadlus. You are still required to ambush. That's halacha, right? You can't just go out to war. Even in these wars, there were ambushes where the Jews went to the side and went around like by the eye. That's what happened. Yeshua set up ambushes on the side to make sure that they would kill the nation entirely. The reason why they did that by the eye is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not in charge in that case. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not directly involved. It was the Jews doing it on their own. This case was different. If Moshe Rabbeinu is alive, Michoel is not able to be there. Do you remember that famous word? Yeah. That when Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, Michoel isn't there. So that's the famous Parshat Tzavah, is the only Parshat where Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned, where he's not involved. So Moshe Rabbeinu is not there in Parshat Tzavah, right? Okay. The amount of Pesukim in the Parsha is 101. 101 is the gematria of Michoel. Because Michoel is only around when Moshe is not there. Now, understand it this way. Okay, Moshe, if you spell out the name, there's the revealed thing is the mention, hey. The helam, the missing part of Moshe Rabbeinu's name, is mem, mem, mem. Shin, shin yud nun. Hey, hey Aleph. Spelling out the letters, there's the actual name mem shin hey, and then there's the mem yud nun Aleph. The hidden part of Moshe. What Moshe was able to hide was mem yud nun Aleph. 40, 10, 50, 1 is 101. The hidden part of Moshe is Michoel. So when Moshe Rabbeinu is around, God is with us. When Moshe Rabbeinu is gone, Michoel is with us. In this war, there was no strategy given. There were no ambushes. The Jews just went out against Midian, and they all died. Why? Because God fought for us. The only way for God to fight for us is if Moshe Rabbeinu was in charge. If Yeshua was in charge, then it would be Michoel. And there'd have to be ambushes, and they'd have to fight in a natural fashion. So because Moshe would do this while you're alive, Hashem said to Moshe, therefore you'll be able to defeat the entire nation by me, says Hashem, I'll kill the Malach, and then the whole nation will be ready for you. That's the idea of what's going to happen over here. That's the pshat. Yeah.
So when Moshe is not around, who fights the Malach?
Michoel.
Okay, and when Moshe is around, who fights the Malach?
Hashem. So to speak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. The only way to get that is through Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's that. That's the idea, by the way. Kumla Hashem b'yafusuei Bethel. When do we say that? Taking out the Sefer Torah. By even so aron by Yom Moshe. Kumla Hashem b'yafusuei Bethel b'yanusim esenachem yipanecha. God will fight for us when Moshe Rabbeinu is around. In the Midbar, God is the one that did everything. Nobody else had to do it. That's really the Igra Dekala as well. That's the next part, number 8. Number 9. The Yalku Rubini says the purpose of fighting the Midyanim was because the Satan wanted Jews to die, and we put them in our place. Instead of Jews dying, those people died. The Midianim died in the place of the Jews, so the Satan's taina was fulfilled. Even though that wasn't necessarily enough, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu had to die at the end. Moshe Rabbeinu had to be the final kapara, since the Jews were not going to die from all that. I'm going to skip the Be'er Yosef for right now. It's an easy answer, but you can look at it yourselves a little bit later. The Be'er Yosef is an interesting answer in and of itself. I'm going to tell you over the Jubno Magid, then we're going to skip to the last part. Jubno Magid suggests through the Medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to see if the Jews were really tzaddikim, or if they were still having taivas for these women. So he gives a mashal. Okay? That's what the Jubno Magid does. A father whose son was a serious alcoholic and druggie. I'm adding on that part. He didn't talk about druggie. Okay, his son is a terrible, terrible alcoholic, terribly addicted to drugs. Cannot get over it whatsoever. So the father will do anything to get his son off. He begs the son. He pays the son. He gets people to hang out with him, but the son can't handle it. Every time he goes anywhere near liquor, he smells the smell, and he immediately goes in. So one time he heard that there's a certain chacham that was coming to town, a hypnotist. Okay, and he said, this guy can heal anybody of anything. So the father comes to him, and he tells him his tale of woe. Right? It's pretty good, right? Pretty good. Tale of woe. Anyway, so he goes and he tells him, my son, I don't know what to do. His father tells him, the guy says, the chacham says to him, listen, don't worry about it. I got this taken care of. Bring him in, he'll be cured for life. Okay. Brings in his son. The guy does his whole hypnotist thing. Says, from now on, wine and the smell of wine will be to you like animal dung. It'll be like animal poo. You won't be able to handle it all, and drugs as well, nothing will smell good to you. So his father didn't know if it worked. I mean, the son left. He paid the guy a huge fee, right? And it's, you know, they went home, and the son didn't drink anything, but maybe it's because he wasn't there. So the father wanted to test him. So he gives his kid a big barrel. He says to him, listen, go to the bar and go have the barkeep fill up this barrel for you. Okay? And we'll pay him later on. Go get some wine. So the son said, okay, whatever you want, father. He goes to the bar, and he goes in, and he smells the wine, and it smells so disgusting to him. It smells like a huge farm, just a massive farm, that he takes the barrel and he smashes it to the ground. Then he takes all the barrels of wine that are right there, smashes all of them, to the ground. The barkeep goes crazy. He's like, what are you doing? Stop it. He runs over to the guy's father, to the kid's father. He knew the kid really well. He runs over to the kid's father. He says to the kid's father, look what your son just did. He just smashed all the barrels. The father looks at him. He's so happy. He's like, that's the most amazing thing I've ever heard. He's like, don't worry about the barrels. I'll pay for everything. But now I know that my son is cured. I would do anything to hear this thing. I would pay any amount of money to hear that my son is cured from all this. This is the happiest day of my life. So even though he lost a ton of money, he was so happy that his son was cured. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to see. In his lifetime, before he died, he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to see if the Jews were cured from their problem. Were they cured of their tithes for these women? Were they cured or not? And when they came back and some of the women were still alive, Moshe Rabbeinu was so upset. How could you do that? I can't believe it. I thought you guys were done. And when they said, no, we only left alive the young woman who had never been together with a man, the younger woman who were unable to be Roy Lipia, meaning there was no taiva for them, that's the only people who went around, Moshe Rabbeinu said, now I'm ready to die. Now that I see that you guys have been attacking yourself, you fixed yourself from your issue, now I'm ready to go. That's what he ended up saying to them. That's a muscle from the Dubno Magen. Now, the last thing we're going to say is, based on the Gemara Sota Daf Yud Dalet, Moshe Rabbeinu was buried opposite Baal Peor. Remember Baal Peor from last week? Baal Peor is a type of idol, as we all know, that they went to the bathroom on. And somewhere in Jordan is the mountain of Baal Peor, where the people who served it used to go. Opposite that mountain is the mountain that Moshe Rabbeinu was buried on, Har Nevo. We don't know where it is. The whole point is, the Gemara in Sota says that it's hidden from our eyes. Lo yada ishes kvuraso. Nobody, no man knows where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried. But we are given hints. It's opposite Baal Peor. Says the Gemara in Sota, every single time that Baal Peor wants to be mekatrig on the Jews, wants to go up to Shemayim, on the day that they sinned, on the day that they did Baal Peor themselves, Baal Peor wants to go up to Shemayim, and the way it's understood by Tosfos, Moshe Rabbeinu stands up and they're like, And Baal Peor sinks back down to the ground. Every time Baal Peor tries to come up, it sees Moshe Rabbeinu's kever, and it sinks back down. Here's the pshat. He had his own fight, Moshe Rabbeinu. The Midianim would die in the hands of the Jews. But after Moshe Rabbeinu died, he would fight it as well. He couldn't fight in his lifetime because the Midianim did him such a favor by letting him live in their land. So he couldn't fight during his lifetime. He's not going to fight the Midianim themselves. But after he dies, he's going to fight the Koach of the Midianim, the Baal Peor. He's going to fight them tooth and nail afterward. He's not going to allow them to go up. That's what it means. Achar tesefel anecha. After you die, you're going to fight against Baal Peor and everything that's there over there. The Igret Akala says the klipa, the type of tuma that you're dealing with Baal Peor is something called charon af. That comes when you do the sin, and it always makes its kitruv, and that's why charon af is the gematria of Moshe. 345. That's the reason why it's there. The znus was causing such accusations, only Moshe Rabbeinu could stop those accusations from ever being brought up in Beis and Shemayla. And our last thing is like this. This is my favorite word of all time, probably because it's written by the Netzutzei Shemshon. If you don't know the Netzutzei Shemshon, then aside from being not Jewish, you have no idea what life is all about. Honestly, I don't understand how you have any simcha in your life, and you probably have never, ever, ever had a good time in your life. You might have thought you did. You didn't. Not until you read the Netzutzei Shemshon. Rav Shimshon Yashkapolya lived about 350 years ago. He was a Mekubal, but a Mekubal that never wrote anything down. We only have little vorts and pieces from the Netzutzei Shemshon. Every single one is a gold mine that is the greatest thing you have ever heard in your life. It is literally the craziest stuff in the world, and he always says, Hashem atov yechaper badi, that he should be mechaper for what I have. Like, honestly, if I would go back in time and I want to see anybody, obviously Moshe Rabbeinu is up there. I want to see the Netzutzei Shemshon. I want to see what this guy looked like. I don't even care that he's going to burn me with his eyes the first time he looks at me and say, like, you don't deserve to see see me, and I'll be like, I know, and then die afterward. It doesn't matter. The description is awesome. He says, right over here, that we all know Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to defeat Midian. We know the line of Bira de Shatis Mine Lo Tishad de Bekala. The boar that you drink from, you don't throw a clump of dirt in there. He grew up in Midian. He can't fight against Midian. So he sent Pinchas instead. Fine. Hashem knew that. So why did Hashem say that he should fight Midian? He didn't say send Pinchas. He said you. But Nikom, Nikmas Bnei Yisrael Mes Midian. Take revenge from the Midian. Right? That's what he said. So why would Hashem say that if he didn't want him to fight?
He gave him the Makkah at the
No, he didn't. Aaron did.
No, but it was given to Moshe.
Again, the same type of question could be asked there. So, but how could he do that?
Every time that he was able to think about a thing, he chose wrong. So,
okay, in Akanami, but no, he didn't choose wrong. He chose his derech, which was always his derech to have the biggest challenge. No, we don't know what would be the other way around. I don't know if that's true. But in Akanami, yes, he did choose what we look at as being, seeing that it wouldn't be that way. But no, that wasn't the answer. We're not giving him a choice. It was like this. So here's the pshat. Gemara Roshana, Chaf Hei Amud Beis, says, Shlosha Kalei Olam, Keneged Shlosha Chumrei Olam. There are three people who aren't looked at in the best light in Tanakh that are equal to three Chomri Olam, three people that everyone knows they are the greatest of the great. The Gemara lists Yiftach. Now, I know none of you went to seminary, so Navi is a hard thing for you. Yiftach was a Shofet, okay? He wasn't exactly the greatest of Shoftim. He's the one who promised, the first thing that comes out of my house will be sacrificed to God, and it was his daughter, and either he killed her or he sent her away in a convent for the rest of her life. That was Yiftach. He was a tremendous person, but Yiftach. Gidon is not seen in a very big light, did a lot of strange things, like the ephod, etc. There were a lot of strange things, and Shimshon. We all know Shimshon's story. Shimshon, you know, together with the Plishtim and everything that he did there. Those three leaders of Klal Yisrael who look like they are not good people, who look like they did bad things, are equal, says the Gemara, to Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel and Avi. The three greatest leaders that Klal Yisrael had, maybe not including David HaMelech and Noach, but Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel are equal to those three. So the Gemara actually lists. Aaron is like Shimshon. Yiftach is like Shmuel. And Gidon is like Moshe. Says the Nitzus Shimshon, why are we comparing Gidon to Moshe? What's the comparison between Gidon and Moshe? So here's the pshat. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu came back as Gidon. When Gidon was chosen, he says there are Ramazim throughout the Navi. I'll give you some hints right now. Gidon was threshing, doing his work that his father set him to do when God appears to him all of a sudden. The first time he appears, he turns away. And then he comes and he looks at it. The word Ehayeh is used twice in Tanakh. One by Moshe Rabbeinu, second time by, take a guess. Very good. There are three signs given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Remember the hand with the tzaraf, throwing the stick down, and then the water turning into blood? Three signs are given to Gidon that he's going to win the war. As soon as Gidon finds out that he's supposed to be the Shofet, he's like, nah, don't pick me. He was an Anav. He was a pure Anav. And then, when he does pick him, he argues with Hashem and says, how could you have done this to your people the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu always does? There are so many similarities between Gidon and Moshe about what they did. Gidon is Moshe Rabbeinu. Gidon fights a big war during his lifetime. Who does he fight up against? Midian. If he fights Midian, here's how you understand the pasuk says in the Tzitzit. Moshe Rabbeinu was told that you're going to fight Midian. But you can't fight Midian in your lifetime. You can't. You have no ability to. Because Bira de Shaftis Minei Lo Tishadi Bekala. You're not allowed to fight. You're going to have to send Pinchas. But when are you going to fight Midian? Achar Tehaseh Kalamecha. After you die. After you die, you will fight against Midian in the times of Gidon. You're going to come back as Gidon, and you're going to fight at that point. You're going to wait until then. That's how Moshe knew that he didn't have to fight this war. How did he know to send Pinchas? This is a great svara, Moshe, but you were told to fight. How can you wait? How can you say, I'm going to send Pinchas instead? The answer is because he knew. The command was never for him to fight. The command was for him to send somebody else and fight after he died. That's the idea behind it. That's what it means by Gideon over here. That, honestly, I can't believe I didn't die after saying over that board. That is the craziest idea you could possibly get, that Gideon took over from Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, summary, just to make a quick summary, we said from Rashi, the Kliyukr, the Malbim, Reb Shach, and the Ksav Sofer, that Moshe Rabbeinu, the original idea, Moshe Rabbeinu was happy to do this, even though he knew he was going to die. We then said, why was the king? I'm sorry?
Moshe's predecessor, wasn't Moshe
Rabbeinu's panel?
And Chase,
yeah.
And then there's a couple of them, I think, sharing the Shabbos.
Yeah, but...
So I'm saying, so that's crazy that you don't share the Shabbos with Moshe Rabbeinu.
No, you'd think that Tikkun was done. You'd think that it's completely done. Moshe Rabbeinu did everything he possibly could in this world, but there was one thing he didn't do. He didn't fight Midian. That's the only thing he didn't do. Other than that, he would have been fine. Then we gave a bunch of answers to why it was contingent on Moshe Rabbeinu's death. Altogether, 11 answers. Then after we said that the whole idea of the Igret Akala, the fact that he had to be buried opposite Baal Peor, finally, the Nesusa Shimshon of why it had to happen after he died. Go ahead, guys.